Okay, April 6, 1982, and we're still talking with Goodwin Semikin. We were towards the end of a story about him hunting a bear and shooting a cub.
Okay, so I went, well, it wasn't too big of a bear, and I thought, well, I might as well let the cub go. It was getting late, you know, the sun was going down in end of August. No, it was about middle part of September. I didn't know what to do, you know. So I just I dragged the bear from where it dropped, and then I dragged it and put it right in my boat. I put it right on the bow, and then I went down on the other side to the island where he swam across from. There was a nice gravel bar there. So I unloaded it there and I started skinning it. The sun went down then, and it was late in the evening. It started to get dark, so I took good care of the meat, you know. I didn't want to put it on the rocks or put it on the sand. So I took my plastic tarp and plastic bags, and one piece at a time I cut off, and I put it in a plastic bag and put it in the boat. By the time I got through, it was dark then. So I kept on, went back in the boat, and then I started to hear that cub hollering way up there, you know, where I shot the mother from. I went up there and looked for it, and I couldn't find it, you know. It stopped hollering. I began to think, well, I might as well kill the cub too. I came back and then finished my work butchering, and I was ready to go, and then started hollering again. So I went back up there again in my boat, you know, over on the other side of the river. I went up there again and started to look around for it. And I stood there and drift down in my boat. But soon I seen a willow fall down from way up, branches fall from one of those trees. And there he was, way up on that tree, you know. So I ran up there with my .22, and then I knocked it down. Then it fall down, then I grabbed it and put it in the boat, and then I left down the river with it. I came down to 22 miles, and there were some guys down there who was fishing. I didn't know it, you know. At 22 miles, they were putting some fish nets. And while it was dark, I seen a light way back there, and I wonder what was that light. No, there was a bar quite a ways out, and I was on the main river. Then I had to go way down and then back into the slough. I came up to them, and there was Gregory and Bing. He said they heard boats, so they come out, and that was me they heard, you know. So I went back there, and there was quite a few people there. At tents up, you know, was fishing. So I asked him, you guys want to cook a bear? Black bear? He said, yeah. I said, I got a cup down there in the boat. Why don't you guys skin it and cook it? And they skinned it, and I went to bed. Next morning I woke up, and there was just a little hind quarter left of the cup, you know. They had ate all the whole cup overnight, you know. It was pretty fat. It was pretty good shape. And then I tasted, gee, that thing tastes good. It was nice, tender meat and fat. And then I told those boys, I said, if I knew it was that good, I'd never let you have that cup. I said, you guys left only the hind quarter for me, I told them. And all night they had been cooking it and eating it. It was several other guys that was there, you know. They were just having a party with it, you know, that I didn't know it was that good. So I came back to town, came back up here, then I had to go to work, and just working up here in school, then I came back to work.
A lot of the times you went hunting, you would be out hunting, and then you'd come back to work, and you don't get much sleep.
Well, there's a lot of times that I, like if I go to Nolado or Galen, you know, I'd play cards. One time I I was up Nulato. I think it was on Friday. And then I was up there playing poker for 2 days. I went up for funeral. There was some funeral up there. I went up there, me and my wife. And then I got a call. They said there was a barge coming down, got to fuel up this storage tank out here. So somebody had to be here. So I waited till the last minute, you know. So I left early in the morning after I quit playing cards in the morning. I never slept for 2 days. I was playing poker that long. I came down and then they were just starting to pump fuel. They had unloaded some stuff up here at the slip up here. And they just moved down here. So I told them what to do and where to hook up the hose to fill up those tanks. And then how much fuel we would need for the winter. I stand out there on a bank and I just go to sleep standing up. You know, that sleepy I was. Pretty soon I woke up, the tanks were flown over too much fuel. I run out to the bank and I holler at those guys. I said, the tanks are full now. Well, we're not up to your market. They said, well, I said, I got no more room. We were supposed to pick up 25,000, they said, you know, but there was some fuel left in those tanks. That's how much their storage tank was holding, 25,000, you know. There was some fuel left in there. So right away I opened up the day tanks and filled them up. But still at that, the tank was running over. And well, I said, give me the total of what you pumped up. And that's all we can take, I told them. And you give me a total of 23,000 gallons of fuel. You know, we're supposed to get 25,000, but there was a couple of thousand left in the tanks that, you know, that and we couldn't hold anymore. So after they got through and then before they unhooked the lines, I shut off the valve and then went to bed. And then next morning I had to go back to work and send somebody up for my family in Nulato to bring down my family.
My dad
used to do the same. He used to go up there with carrying mail. Sometimes he'd sleep 3 or 4 hours and then come back down with the mail and catch up with his sleep in Caltech. And I'm the same way. If I go up there and play poker all night, I come down, sleep for maybe 20 minutes, I'm good for another 8 or 9 hours if I sleep for 20 minutes. And as long as I keep moving, and then I never get sleepy. And as long as I'm working, I never even feel it. I can work till I drop, I guess. You know, that's the way I feel. I used to feel, but now it started to catch up with me. I think my age is catching up with me, and I start to feel it now if I get lack of sleep. But if I get something to do and something that I can do pretty steady, you know, I can do it till I'm done with that work, with the job I'm doing. And then after that, then I could sleep, you know. If I sit down, I could sleep. And I could just sit down on the chair and sleep for a half hour or an hour.
Sitting up, you're sleeping.
Sitting up. And then I got enough sleep again. I got enough sleep for next 10 or 12 hours again.
Playing cards or gambling. Did you ever used to do that with Furs?
Well, I never used to do that with Furs. I never did try to gamble everything I got. You know, if I lose a little money, then I quit. I was thinking about my family. But now I know I got a steady income coming, you know, as long as I'm working. So I could gamble all I want because I know I got some more money coming, you know. But with Furs, it's pretty hard. Sometimes you don't catch nothing. Sometimes you have a pretty good trapping on fur.
Did other people used to gamble with furs?
It's not a people that used to gamble with fur. Other people that used everything they got, you know. But that's some of the experience that I have learned from way back, and I never done that all my life. But I always think that you know, for about 10 years back, I still think I could run as fast as any young guys, you know. But right now I couldn't, because I always think that alcohol has never hit my system, and that keeps me in pretty good health. And, you know, I see a lot of young guys that, like for instance, would play baseball, and I could run around that time maybe 3 or 4 times, you know, and I never even get tired, or never even feel it, or never even get exhausted. And some guys would run, make one run around that diamond, and then they've been puffing away and exhausted, you know, panic. I never done that, you know. And then I think that because there was no alcohol or smoking, never hit my system or my body. And because when I used to run a long time ago, you know, like you say, I used to run to Nolado, like the one Virginia Callan, Edgar Callan told you about. You know, I ran all the way up to Nolado, and it looks like I could run some more even after I got to Nolado. And it seems like I went about 12 miles up here, up to that bluff, and I was passing some teams there that had left about an hour ahead of me. I passed those teams running, you know, I passed them. And it seems like I just started to run the way I feel. You know, sometimes I don't even touch the ground the way I feel. Looks like I was just floating around in the air, you know. And then when I feel that way, you know, it seems like it's better for me if I run faster, put a little bit more speed.
Do you feel like your mind thinks different, or you think about different things?
You know, all the thing I think about is the dance I'm going to have in Nolado. No, I never think about anything else but the time I'm going to have in where I'm going to, you know. And then whatever they do, like dancing or gambling or baseball game or football game, soccer ball game, that's always in my mind.
When you're running like that and you know you're going to run a long distance, do you try to keep a steady pace so you don't get too worn out? Are you thinking about your breathing, or you just go?
Well, when you run like that and you have exercise every day, you know, you can run a long, long ways before you get exhausted. For instance, there's one time I dropped right here at the foot of the hill. I blame myself for it. And you know, me and my brother was out trapping, me and Benjamin was out trapping. And we got to 22 mile camp down here from about 20 or 30 miles below there. We came to that camp and he had six good dogs. And you know, my brothers never used to give me a ride. As long as I was young, you know. They wouldn't give me a ride with their dogs. I used to run behind them or run ahead of them. We got to 22 mile at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, after we check our traps, beaver traps. So I told my brother, well, seems like it's going to be too long. He said he's going to stay overnight. It seems like it was going to be too long for me. The day was going to be too long for me. I thought, well, I'm going to keep on going to Caltech. And I was single. And I was thinking about my girlfriend up here. So I told him, well, I'm going to go to Caltech. And I just put on my snowshoes, nothing, no axe, no gun, not even a bite to eat. And I just took off there. Just started running, run part of the way, and then I started to get hungry. Just about 8 miles below here. I got thirsty, wanted to drink water, nothing to drink water in. So I break some ice, you know, the rough ice that was sticking out in the snow. I break them off and I chew that and I keep on walking and running part of the time. Pretty soon it started to get dark on me. You know, it seems like I was trying to go fast. Boy, when I got to the bank down here, I couldn't come up the bank. I was that tired, I couldn't come up the hill. I was so hungry, mostly hungry, wanted a drink. Think about all the good things that I to eat and drink. I lay down there and I fall asleep. That's the worst thing you can do when you panic, is to lay down. You know, if you just sit up, it's all right. I just lay down on the snow and I just went to sleep. I must have slept there for about 10 minutes. You know, then I woke up, then I started to go up the bank. I was just staggering going up the bank. I just barely made it to the house over there and I drank water and just passed out.
So how many miles did you run that day?
I must run about 50 miles. Between 40 and 50 miles that day.
And you started out running at what time?
Well, it was partly running all day long, you know. But my brother used to get up early. But as now it was on the trap line, you know, I never ran, I just walk, you know. And I never learned my lesson. Every time I go somewhere, like I'm going to Nalada, I do the same thing. And I never put on a parkie. All my life, I don't think I never used a parkie. I used just a shirt, sometimes a sweatshirt. The sweatshirt was really good. The windbreaker, those ones. And a pair of pants and gloves. Well, my dad used to tell me if the cool air hit you, that's the time you feel good. And you like if you dress too warm, you say you don't feel right if you dress too warm. And so I believe him what he said, you know, like my wife tried to make me a beaver hat or Martin hat. And I couldn't wear it, you know, it was too hot for me. And parky, I used to use only one light parky, you know, but without any rough around it. That's all I used to wear. I always leave myself like I'm going to run and walk and keep warm.
That's the way I'm on your snow machine.
Right now on the snow machine, I got to put on the best, warmest clothes I got right now. You know, and still like that, I get cold. My hand gets cold. That's the only one that gets cold on me.
What about when you first were using snow machine? Did you have to dress up like that then?
No, I never dressed up like that because I knew I could run around and warm, in a little while run around, you know, and then warm up. But when I was driving dogs, I used to dress the same way, dress pretty light. Because I always think if my dogs cannot make it, I'll make it, you know. In fact, one time when I first got married, me and my wife, we stayed out for Christmas down at 22 Mile. That's my camp. That's where I was raised, you know. And then just after Christmas, New Year, right after New Year, run out of grub, and then we started to come up. And my dogs were a little bit too young yet. My brother went with me. My brother Artie went with me. And he had 9 dogs, and I had 8. So we left early in the morning. My Margaret, my first daughter, was really small, you know. So I put my wife in the sleigh, covered her up, and made just like a tent for her. Put her inside there. And then we start windy down at 22 mile all the time. But I thought we'd get out of the wind somewhere. We usually get out of the wind about 16 miles. And boy, it was windy all the way, and then my kids started crying. Margaret started crying. I knew he was tired. And there was no sign of trail. You know, no trail at all. There was a little bit trail, but you couldn't walk on it on snowshoes. You couldn't feel it in snowshoes. And the snow was almost up to my knee. And so I started to walk ahead of the dogs without snowshoes. That's the only way I could follow the trail. I walked all the way up from 8 miles without snowshoes, you know, ahead of my dogs. And I string out my dogs, try to make some time. Because I know my kid was tired and my wife was tired sitting in the sleigh. We got up here about 9 o'clock that evening. Oh, what a relief. I come in the house and then my kid was all tucked out. My wife was tired too, sitting in the sleigh all day long.
What about you?
Me, I don't feel it, you know. As long as I was doing it for my family, I never feel it. I wasn't tired at all. I was still running around. I'd go back and feed my dogs and put my dogs away. That was about 47, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just before you got sick then?
Yes, before I got sick, yeah. Oh,
so those are the ways you ran yourself down, huh?
That's the way I run myself down. I think I never feel myself tired. Mm-hmm. You know, I just overdo myself and I don't know it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of other things do you do when you overdo it, you know, before you got sick?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how I feel. And, you know, I still don't. Well, right now I started believing saying somebody would say, "I'm pretty tired now." They say, you know. Well, about 10 years back, I never believed in that. Say you get tired, because I never know when I get tired. And like moving around heavy things. And, you know, there's things that I always tell my boys, there's always a way to move anything that's heavy. There's always a way that you stop and think and do it little by little. Don't try to do it in a hurry. You'll never get anywhere. All you do is just killing yourself. If you do it, stop and think and do it little at a time, you'll make it. You'll do it.
What kind of heavy things did you move?
I had moved this warehouse of mine 2 different times, you know. And sometimes I move it alone.
How'd you move it?
Well, just by thinking, you know, just little at a time. Do it the easy way. Like I wasn't trying to kill myself, even though it took me a long time. To do it, you know, I put bars and drums under it or poles and roll it.
So you didn't use any kind of equipment to move it?
There was no kinds of equipment to move it around. No. No kinds of come along or something heavy that you'd move around. In fact I had a fish wheel, a 17-foot long. It was 34 overall. the fish wheel I made one time, king salmon wheel.
The length of it?
The length of it was 34 feet long. It was 17 feet on one way, you know, half of it. And a king salmon wheel I made. It took me a long time to make that wheel. It took me about 10 days to make that wheel. And it took me a lot of work to set up that wheel. And I don't know how many different places I set that wheel. You know, just trying to get some king salmon for myself, for my family, for the winter. In fact, on 4th of July, I work at that thing all day. The basket dropped one side, and I pull it back up with block and tackle and put it back up together. And the poles would be about 10 or 12 feet high. I'd climb up there and hang on with one hand and then nail with the other hand. But I never say nothing. This first time I started to talk about it, you know. Since I done a lot of work on that wheel, and then it got stuck with me one time on a stump. You know, the water dropped on it, and I just let it go. I thought I wasn't going to use it anymore. It gave me too much bad time, you know.
It was too big.
It was too big, and it was too big to handle for me alone. So I thought I might as well let it go. One fall, it was in September, I guess. I had nothing to do, so I went across there. I untied the cable, and then I took come along. Now, it was come along that time. I tried everything, tried to pry it up, and it wouldn't move. So I string out the cable downstream, and I found one big tree way down there, kind of out away from the bank, and it was kind of sticking out from the bank. I tied onto that one, and I started to use that come along. It goes 10 feet every time shorten up my cable again, and then go another 10 feet. Once it went right over that stump, you know, and then went back in the water again. I put the fish wheel away again, you know, put it away for next year again.
Did you use that again the next year?
Next year I used it again, yeah. And that was the only year I ever done good with it. And I was getting a 35 king salmon at one night with it, and I thought I was doing pretty good.
That's unusual for around here.
That's unusual for around here, yeah.
Do many people put in fish wheel for king salmon?
Nobody ever, ever put fish wheel around here for king salmon. Everybody make fish wheel for dog salmon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as for me, I was thinking about, I had energy in me all the time to do something. You know, so I just made king salmon wheel. And I tried to do it different from other people. You know, instead of getting my poles in springtime, when it's time to make fish wheel, I always get it on about this time of the year in April, about end of April. I go back in the woods and then I cut poles and haul it out with snow machine or a dog team and get it ready. And
why do you get it then? It's lighter weight?
Well, it's easier. And then you don't have to rush. Like in the springtime, you got to wait. You wait for the last minute, then you get most any kind of poles. But like if you take your time and go back in anywhere, well, most of the people get in the boat. So they don't go way back along on the trail or back in the creek and cut their fish wheel poles. Well, I kind of figured it out, you know, so I started to do it different from the people. And other people started to do it now. They started to get their poles in the spring on the crust and then have it ready for the spring, you know. I seen quite a few people doing that. And for a fish rack, the same way. You know, on the crust, I used to go up there and cut some poles and leave it right on the bank up here. You know, just leave it there so summertime I don't have to go when the fish start in running, then you don't, you got no time. Mm-hmm. You got no time to go get some poles to dry your fish on. So I just get them ready and on the crest and leave it there. Whenever I need it, I go over and get it. You know. Just go up there in boat and then it's all in one pile, put it in the boat and bring it to where I'm drying fish.
Well, can you usually save your fish wheel? Is there a good place you can put it up and then you have your fish wheel next year, or do you lose it a lot of times?
Well, a lot of times if the fish wheel, like this summer, for instance, this summer I had fish wheel down at 22 miles below here, which is about the best place for fishing besides 8 mile and 4 mile up here. You know, but already people got it, so I don't have any place, any other good place to set wheels, so I had to go down 22 miles. Well, the weather was so bad last summer. You know, the storm came up, and we had quite a bit of fish down there, and I was using two boats. In fact, I was using three boats, one with Harold, who had his own boat, and I had two boats, one of my big boat, a house boat, and one little 24-foot boat. And I left my boat there with 20 horse. But I came up and then the storm came up. Strong south wind with rain came up. I didn't have a chance to go down to check it, you know. But by that time my boat floated away. And I mean, the waves had taken it out, you know. But lucky I tied to a rock instead of tied to something that's something that'll hold it there. I tied to a rock, and the rock, it dragged out with it, and then it went, the wind blew it up the river and pushed it up above my camp, you know. And there it was when I went down. So I took it to shore, took the motor off. The motor was still on there, but there's hardly any water in there. You know.
If you had had it tied up, it would have swamped
it? It would have swamped it, yeah. And I never think, you know, I always think after it's too late, you know. So I took the boat out of the water and then came back up here and stayed up here again for a while and then never went down to my camp for quite a long time. Then another storm came up. Gee, I lost my wheel, I lost my boat, kicker and all. So I waited for a long time. I studied for a long time. I didn't know what to do. So I went down there and I got some gas. I was thinking to go all the way down to Graylin, look for that boat, to kick around the boat. But I took my, my nephew's boat. It was open boat, Harold. I took his boat and I went down. I took enough gas though so I can go all the way to Graylin. I was figuring, you know. And one of my boys went with me. So we started out and went down to the camp and the kicker was gone, the boat was gone. But I kind of figured always there's things that stop below my camp, you know. So I started to run close to the beach there after we left the camp. And it looked like there was a lock back there. But look, the lock looked pretty straight. You know, you didn't see the kicker. Because the kicker would be sticking out if the boat was upside down, I figured. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I turned around and stopped there, and sure enough, the boat was there. It was upside down. But the kicker has tilted back, you know, and couldn't see the motor. So I told my boy, I said, gee, I know where we can get that boat out of the water. So I went back to the camp and got my hip boots and walked in the water. No way I can turn it up. I went back and got a rope and come along there. I tied onto it and I tied a rope on it and tried to tip it up. It go up so far and then go back down. So I just took off my top clothes, and then I went down and unscrewed the kicker, you know, the kicker was on in the mud. That's why you wouldn't tip up. You know, it was just buried in the mud. So I unscrewed it, and then I took the kicker off, and then I done the same thing with the come along. Then he went back about halfway. Then I walked out there and put pole underneath it to hold it up, you know. And then I hold it up like that while my boy was holding the come along up there. And put another rope on it and tie it, and then I slack down the come along and then grab another hole on it. And then we tip it over. The boat is full of water. We try to bail it out, but no. I tell you, I said, there's only one tied behind the boat. So the boat was full of water, and I just tied behind the boat and speed up my kicker, and all the water run out of it, you know, drain all out. And the boat was on top of the water, and then we went up to the camp. I pulled the boat out of the water and took the kicker and bring it up. I brought it up, and then I took the whole motor apart. Just took every bolt out, and I thought it was going to run again. So I let everything dry and washed in oil, and then I let it sit there for a couple of days, and then I began to get lazy to put it back together. So I asked Freddie Alex, you know, we always call him Freddie Ben, asked him how much he'll charge me to put my kicker together. Oh, they said, well, it depends on how much time it's going to take me. So you come down and then put the kicker together and then fix it back up, pull the kicker, and then you start. And my fish wheel had flowed away already down there. So I asked Father Sebastian, if you could. I pull in my wheel, that's right. I pull in my wheel so it won't float away. And I always tell my boys how to tie the cable, but I didn't watch them how they tied it, you know. I lost the cable already before that in Canada, because I never do it myself. You know? I do it the way it won't slip, you know. But I told my boys to tie it while I was doing something else. And they tied some way that it would slip, and it slipped. That cable had slipped apart, you know, at the connection. And then my fish wheel, it flowed away that way. You know. So I asked Father to bring me down and look around for the wheel. So I said, okay. So I went back in his plane. I took Franklin and Plasker with me. You know, I was going to give them right out. Paid Father anyway for the gas, you know. He wouldn't charge us for if we're flying with him, you know, so long as we pay for the gas. So I went down 50 miles down here, and there was my wheel on a bar. So I thought of it for a while, you know. While I was flying up, I was thinking about it, and then after we got up here, he asked me what I was going to do with my fish wheel. Well, gee, that's quite a waste to haul it 50 miles to push that fish wheel, I said. I was just thinking to bring down two boats and put the two baskets on there and let the raft go. I began to think how long it took me to make that raft. It took me 2 days to make the raft, and where it would take me about 6 hours to bring it up, 6 or 7 hours. Well, I figured 4 hours and half to bring it up, and about 60 gallons of gas. So I took my 70 horse, no, I took my son's 50 horse, and my nephew's 50 horse, Merck, and I took my 20 horse. Then we went down there. Then we started to push it up. See, it was coming up pretty good. And come all the way up in 4 hours and a half.
That was all on one boat or two boats?
Three boats. We push it all the way up, and then we put it in the slough and put it away. Now it wouldn't have to take me 3 or 4 days to make another wheel again. You know, I figured it all out, so I just thought I'd do it in one day instead of doing it in 3 or 4 days again next season, you know.
So you're all set up for next season, is it?
I'm all set up now for next season now.
Do you have a slew or something you put it in?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Now there's other things that I already figure out what to do for when the fish season is open again. Instead of rushing around, I was thinking to do little at a time, you know, get ahead. Like last summer was rushing around, you know, waiting for the last minute, making cutting table, raft, and things like that.
So are you
going to
fish for kings too?
I beg
your
pardon?
Are you
going to
fish for kings?
I'm going to fish for kings.
You'll use nets for kings?
I'm going to use a net for kings, and I'm going to use my fish wheel for commercial fishing, you know. But the nets, I was thinking I'm going to put in as much as I can, get ready for the podcast for next year, for next winter.
And you'll have other people with you at fish camp?
Mm-hmm. Well, my daughter-in-law is quite a help to me, you know, all the time. But last summer he was working in city office and he couldn't get away from there. Therefore, my other daughter-in-law, Josephine Semikin, stayed with us last summer with his family. And they enjoyed it very much staying down there. In fact, my daughter-in-law, Josephine didn't want to come back up, you know, on weekends or anything. He just wanted to stay at the camp. So I figured I'm going to fix it better for them, so they like the camp better. And
so what kind of things do you have fixed up at your camp? What do you have there?
Well, I was thinking to make, I got a little frame building there. And besides that, I got tent frame there. But now I'm thinking to build a canopy there. And I'll put a screen or a mosquito net all around it. It's 11 by 11, I already framed up, you know. And then just put the mosquito net around it and put a door on it. And when there's rain, we put plastic on the side. Just for a place to eat, you know, for it. Mm-hmm. And get out of the weather and get out of the mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are pretty heavy down there in summer, springtime. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking to put up one like that. And some of my daughters said they were going to come for the summer. You know, like Margaret on the relief, you say, might come down for a couple of weeks. And my daughter, Julia, say going to come down for a couple of weeks on relief. And my other daughter, what she's expecting in June. But his husband is going to go to school in Fairbanks. And during that time, he says he's going to stay down here with us, you know. So I'm trying to prepare things for them ahead of time so they all stay with me at the camp, you know. I feel better when my whole family stay with me. I feel like there's nothing better than, in this world, better for me, you know. I feel happy if my whole family stay with me. I told that to my son-in-law too. Dr. Kani. Mm-hmm.
Does he ever stay with you too?
No, he never stayed with me, but I used to tell him that I feel better if my daughter stay with me, I tell him. But he said I feel better too when she stay with me, you know, so he talked me out of it. You know. Mm-hmm.
Well, when you've got your family all together, what kinds of things? Well, I guess you work at your fishing, but do you do other things together? Sit around and talk to each other and tell stories?
Well, when my family stay with me, I don't have time to talk, you know. I just enjoy it with, like, my grandchildren around me and my whole family around me. Like for instance, now this last carnival I was up in Fairbanks, you know, all my daughters were there, all except for Betty Griffin, who was quite a ways down. But the rest of my daughters from Anchorage went, and one from St. Mary went up there. And usually when I have a stomach ache, I always feel pain, you know, and my ulcers always bother me. And I have pain in my stomach all the time. Well, all during the time I was in Fairbanks, you know, I feel I had stomach ache, but I never feel anything. I just feel the stomach ache, but off and on it come on. And that's all I remember. I feel like I was, I feel like I had everything, as long as my family was with me. And that's just the way I felt before Christmas, before my daughters, my two daughters came for a Christmas vacation, Diane and Jackie. And just about a week before Christmas, gee, I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it no more. You know, I just couldn't wait for my daughters to come back and spend the Christmas holidays with me. And besides that, Josephine came down to with his family. He said they were going to come down. It seemed like I couldn't wait for all of them. And just that was, I missed them so much.
So what did you do? How did you take care of?
Well, I couldn't keep still, so I just made a trip to Nolado. And then back down again till my family come in to Caltech. And then after that, I don't feel it. And after my family come in, my kids come in.
Then you're happy to be here.
I'm happy to be with them, you know, and they were too. You know, it's the same way with my grandchildren now. And every time they see me, they just, I don't know what they think of me. They just hug me and love me and everything, you know.
Well, since this book about you is going to sure be for your grandchildren too, you know, it's going to be for all the young people around here. But what kind of things do you want your grandchildren to know about yourself, or kind of advice you'd like to be able to give them when they're old enough? Since you read your book, sir.
Well, by reading a book, you know, this, I think they will learn quite a bit about some of the things that I have said, you know. And they might use some, like some things that I have talked about the book. You might get a little experience and use it. And that's what I like other people to do. To read about something and then use it. You know, it's just like going to school and then quit that middle of the school and then let everything go down in the drain. You know, I always think about it like these young generations here. They could do a lot of things for themselves if they just stop and think about it and try to make something out of them, out of themselves, instead of drinking and don't make any sense at all for me. Without a drinking, I guess you can go quite a long ways.
So you'd say probably the most important things then for them is to really get experience and not to drink, not to run themselves down.
Well, it's better for a person, I guess, if he don't start in drinking. You know, that's the way I always think anyway. It's not better to start. You start to think about things that, like you say, it's just some good time in drinking. You enjoy it. enjoyed all the things. But for me, I don't believe in it. Seems like I enjoy more than the guys that drinking. And I know every bit of my life. You know, only time I'm sleeping, I think it's only time I.
Well, what do you think about people who, when they're drunk, they do something they wouldn't do when they're sober, and then they use drinking for an excuse? Do you see that happen sometimes?
I heard a lot of people say that, you know, they drink because they had some kind of a problem and things like that, you know, to make them forget about it. Or. But there's a lot of things that you could do, forget about your problems. You know, I really miss my wife, but I still don't intend to drink to forget about it. It's just a work that make me forget, some work that I do, you know, that make me forget about it. I still don't think of drinking is not only the problem that to make you forget about your problems. Mm-hmm. And because there's a lot of times I always think about guys that are drinking and then come up with some kind of a problem that you're holding something against your friend. And then it come up to them when you start drinking. They wouldn't say it when they're sober. I've said that to a lot of people, you know. Why you have to say that to your friends, or why you have to say that to that guy? Why don't you say it when you're sober? Then somebody will believe you. And I wouldn't believe a drinking guy, because he's just talking about things that just come into his mind. Just spill it out right now to other people. If you're sober and say it, then somebody will believe you.
I think that happens. Other people don't pay that much attention to somebody drinking. They don't take them serious.
No, I don't. No, but some of the guys that had quit drinking, I think some of them might think about it, you know. But I never get to talk with guys that has been pretty much was a drinker, like Plaskar Nikolai, you know. He was pretty much a drinker, Franklin Madras. He was quite a drinker too, you know. I never talked to them about it. Like sometimes they have an alcoholic program, and I like to step in it and then explain to them that I don't know about drinking. I don't know how it feels to be to drink. But these guys like Franklin or Plaskar might explain it better than me, because they know how it feels and what they do. Like for instance, Plaskar said the other day, you know, I was still thinking about it. You know, the other day he was telling me that last stick dance we had in Caltech. He said he don't know one bit of that stick dance. For 3 days he was drinking. He said, you know, he don't know what was going on all during that time. And here a lot of people came, you know, to participate in our stick dance and good time, dancing, enjoying meeting other people, get acquainted with people. He don't remember nothing at all, he said. He even asked people what day it was, and people were going, and asked them where they were going. They're going home. They've been here for 3 days, you know. Now they're ready to go home now. He was telling me that, you know. I felt kind of funny about it. But I didn't know how to explain it to him. And now he quit drinking, now he enjoy every bit of what he's doing. And I'm willing to take him any place. Like for instance, if there's some kind of a good time in Nulada dance or dog race or carnival, if he wants to go there, regardless if I have any room or not, I'm willing to take him. You know, I get closer to him. I figure I get closer to him that way. You know, since he quit drinking, you know. And now I go visit him every often, you know. And then he come down and visit me and talk about some other things, like... Do you know what time it is?
Probably time to stop here.